to the Generations Radio Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. Dave Buehner also in studio with me. Just a couple of homeschooling dads in studio on the western plains of Colorado, just trying to keep things together in the breakdown of Western civilization, the breakdown of faith, family, and freedom. And ladies and gentlemen, just came back from the San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival and wanted to report on some of the things that happened down there. It was a record-breaking crowd, from what I can tell, some 2,200, 2,400 people gathered together in San Antonio for a wonderful film festival, and really the only film festival that offers $101,000 to the top grand prize award. And Dave, on top of that, I think you've got a lot of energy among Christian audiences. They are very interested in what's going on in Christian film today. We are certainly beginning to see a Copernican revolution happening in the area of Christian film, and it's not just the watered-down stuff anymore. It's not just the Christians saying, hey, wait up. We want to synthesize. We want to compromise. We want to do pretty much anything the world does, but with just, you know, a couple less curse words and maybe 2 to 3 less nudity scenes in the movies. They're not saying that anymore. Rather, they're saying, hey, we want to bring a distinctively Christian viewpoint to bear. We have a worldview. We believe in something, finally, and we'd like to incarnate what we believe and enculturate what we believe, and we'll do it in the form of motion pictures. So, Dave, what we're seeing right now, I think, is a breakout for Christian film. I mean, it's incredible what's going on. Courageous, of course, did very, very well in the box office. That was the motion picture that received the $101,000 Best of Festival Grand Prize. Doug Phillips gave that out Saturday night, and it was an exciting time with Stephen Kendrick up there at the microphone receiving the award. And Dave, I think what you're seeing is some really good films. Among the documentaries, I think we had 20 to 30 really excellent submissions, way better than what we saw in the early part of the 20s or 2000s, way better than what we saw in the early part of the 2000s. And I think we're going to continue to see something improve in a Christian film over the next number of years. Documentaries, you have a lot of great documentaries. You had one called Unplanned on the lady that jumped the fence from Unplanned Parenthood and wound up a pro-life activist. A very, very interesting motion picture documentary. And, of course, Dave, we interviewed that young lady a couple of months ago on this radio program. But on top of that, you had Captivated. And, of course, we've talked about Captivated already. Captivated meaning this is Philip Telfer's movie on what's happening with media today with young people and how it's frying the brains of so many young people and shifting their worldviews and taking them more to an escapistic world than allowing them to live in the real world and growing up becoming a mature, spiritually sound, well-established young men and young women. Media is destroying us and Captivated. I think a very important motion picture documentary for the 21st century. Absolutely essential that information gets out. Also, Indoctrination did very, very well. In fact, it took the Best of Documentary this year. And Dave, Indoctrination has already sold some 16,000 to 18,000 copies. And also, the Best of Festival last year was Agenda, as you may recall. That has sold 90,000 DVDs thus far, which is very good. I mean, something like $2 million in sales. And I am really pleased with what's going on. In fact, Agenda was just played by some random group somewhere in our county a couple of months ago. It was advertised in the library, and apparently was shown at the library a couple of months ago here in our county. So it's getting into the nooks and crannies, into the counties, into the little villages and towns throughout the entire nation of America, and could have a tremendous impact upon how Americans vote in the 2012 elections. Dave, I think what's happening with Christian film is it's getting out. In the past, the atheists, the humanists, have dominated the area of film, and now you're starting to see a decentralization of control of film production, and guys can do this within their own basements with their own equipment, with their own cameras. And, you know, they might have to invest $12,000, $14,000 into some decent cameras and equipment, but they can do this stuff now, and it's getting better. The point is it's getting better. Is it where it needs to be? Not exactly. But, Dave, I think we're starting to see the honing of the craft, and that's encouraging to me.
Well, Kevin, several of the films that you talked about, these are not the filmmakers' first attempts. The first attempts were really planting seeds, and and the Christian film industry is beginning to mature. When you talk about people like Colin Gunn, I believe this is his fourth, perhaps even his fifth documentary. I remember one of his early ones, Shaky Town, which is a very excellent documentary on some of the happenings that were happening in San Francisco. And so what we have here is when they plant seeds and they start working the craft and they start learning the discipline, they become better with practice. Like everything in life, the more you do it, the better you become. And we are starting to see this maturing in the Christian film industry. We have people who have paid the dues. They may not have gone to the film schools at USC or UCLA, but they've watched film, they've studied the craft, they've looked at the angles, they've learned the technology, they're learning the art of storytelling, they're learning how to direct actors, they're learning camera angles and lighting and makeup and sound and just all the wonderful things that you can do with film, and we're getting much, much better. You talk about the Kendrick brothers. I believe this is their fourth film, their fourth major release, and you know, this one is, what, 900,000 or something DVD copies. They're getting very, very good. Their early script writing resembled that of the early Billy Graham film days, where there was somebody who came to Jesus and, you know, their whole life changed, and wasn't it wonderful? Well, I think they're getting much more mature in their ability to tell stories. And I'm not just their technical work is getting better. The camera work is getting better. The camera pans, the crane shots are smoother and edited better. The acting is better. So every part about the filmmaking is getting better. You know, we're behind the secular world in the art of film. Hollywood is the very, very best at it. They spend millions and millions of dollars on a film, and Christian filmmakers are starting to pay the dues. They're starting to get mature. We're starting to create projects and products.
And the motion picture industry is one way in which you express your viewpoints. It's one way in which you tell the stories. And those stories reflect a worldview perspective that usually involves God and the metaphysics and involves God's law as the ethical standard. Dave, I think we're starting to see a really important movement in the Christian faith. And it's not just the watered-down synthesized thing. It's self-consciously Christian people saying, this is going to be good, solid Christian art, and we're going to express ourselves as well as we possibly can and bring out motion pictures that express important issues, that address important issues of the day. There was the Best Creation film went to a motion picture documentary produced by a young man, I think he was 18 years old, and it was called Crying Wolf. It was very, very well done. It turns out the Enviro freaks have unleashed the wolf plague in Yellowstone, and Dave, they've decimated the elk herds. You talk about absolutely destroying God's creation. The environmentalists are doing everything they possibly can to destroy God's creation. In fact, I want to get this guy, J.D. King, on the air with me, because this story is to be told. Of course, it's destroying ranches everywhere in Montana and Wyoming and all the way down to Colorado. I hear the documentary did refer to Colorado's receiving some of the wolf plague. And so we got a great documentary on that. Young filmmakers, there's a great little short called Lady Jane Grey about the martyr, wonderfully, wonderfully produced by a family in Ohio. And I got a chance to meet them after the awards ceremony on Saturday night. A wonderful, wonderful presentation there. Also, the best short went to a neat little film called The Jester. It expressed in a very artful way one of the most important lessons that you'll find in Scripture. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. A powerful, powerful presentation there from somebody in Oklahoma. I can't remember the director, but he did a very, very good job on The Jester. Well, Dave, I mean, we've got some amazing things going on. Kirk Cameron was at the film festival. I got a chance to sit down and have dinner with Kirk, and it turns out he's got this great little film coming out called Monumental, which is going to be in 500 theaters March 27th. Very exciting stuff. I mean, it's kind of the second Mayflower thing. In fact, he mentioned the second Mayflower in front of everybody. It was sort of one of those surreal moments where he draws, you know, some of my stuff in. And he says, is Kevin Swanson here anywhere? And I was waving my hands, you know, yeah, that's over here. How you doing, Kirk? You know, and so it was a good time. We've got some great documentaries coming out. And I think you're gonna find out millions and millions of people are going to see Monumental. And that's going to have an impact. Because what it's doing is he's going back into the founding of this nation, into the first Mayflower. And then he's suggesting that perhaps the second Mayflower is a possibility. And I've been saying that, as you know, for 20 years. But it's exciting to see Kirk Cameron getting on board saying, yeah, for our children, for our grandchildren. I was sitting right next to his son, and his son is right on board with him, too. He's homeschooling now, by the way.
And what we're talking about here is a battlefield in the war of ideas. These films are the war of ideas taking place right in front of our eyes, in front of our ears. And you talk about a movie like Indoctrination. You got to applaud Colin Gunn for going to battle against the sacred cow, the institution of government schools, and demonstrating for anybody who wants to see, anybody who'll sit through the film, that government schools are not godly. You're talking about people like the Kendrick brothers who are taking on biblical manhood and the movie Courageous. They're trying to uphold a standard of what a man is in God's economy. And when you begin seeing this, what you're seeing is the beginning of the maturing of the tactics in this battlefield of film. What will happen, I believe, when we're more mature as filmmakers is we will see, rather than attacking an issue head on, right on the nail, that moralism of the story, it'll become the ethos, the environment, the warp and woof of the characters that are interacting, perhaps in another plot. But biblical manhood will be demonstrated as they work through the plot. The damage of the public schools will be evident as they're working through another story. I'm particularly excited, Kevin, to see that Christian filmmakers are getting into the historical stories, the narratives of God. When I say that, because all of history is God's story. God was there. God orchestrated all these things that happened. When we look at the great battles, when we look at the wonderful stories, when we look at the martyrs, we look at people like Jane Grey. I'm very excited to see a film about Jane Grey. We're seeing God's handiwork, God's plan of history coming to fruition. And that's a big part of the gospel. The big part of the gospel is that God's plans are coming to fruition, including the judgment and the resurrection and heaven. But we see these in these little stories along the way. When God is present in the metaphysic, God is present in the ethic. And when God is present in ethic, then the gospel shines forth. And this, I believe, is the Holy Grail, the whole purpose that we should be engaged in Christian film, to get people to see that God is real, to fear the God who is holy, and to love the God who is merciful.
This thing is busting out. Ladies and gentlemen, this thing is busting out. You understand what's going on right now? We are in the front seat of an amazing, amazing theatrical production, which is reality. And God, by his sovereignty, is allowing us to make a significant impact. And I think, folks, lay some foundations for something exciting for the next generation or two. And as it turns out, film is a great way to communicate some of these ideas. We have worked with radio for about 9 years, my basement out here, and we continue to work with the teaching of the word and going all across the country and speaking to hundreds of thousands of people each year at homeschooling conferences and family camps and all the rest. So we do everything we possibly can in these other venues, but I think that film may be one more excellent way to solidify some of the convictions and commitments that we have received from the Word of God. And Dave, 800,000 copies of Courageous now in the hands of families across America, 90,000 copies of Agenda, 18,000 copies of Indoctrination. This is good news. I mean, this is good news. This is really good news. You understand, I've worked really, really hard getting the second Mayflower out. I probably got 5,000 copies or 8,000 copies of the second Mayflower out in the last 25 years. Kirk Cameron's going to slam that thing home, and he's going to have that in the homes of millions of people in the next month or two. I'm excited. I mean, this is great. I don't need to be the most famous guy around. Let Kirk be the famous guy. But let's get the ideas out. I think that's the key here.
Given the difference of these two approaches in the two different festivals, I think it's akin a little bit to the difference between Christian homeschooling and Christian private schools. Christian private schools try and take the form, the materials that are all out there, baptize a little Jesus on it, try and make it a little less offensive in the content, whereas homeschooling tries to start from the ground up. I think that the private schools think that a little course correction might be all that's necessary, whereas the homeschools believe you ought to just kind of blow up the whole system, go back to the Bible and start from scratch. You know, one of the differences between these film festivals is that Doug Phillips isn't really interested in making family-friendly films at all. In fact, he's not interested in being friendly. It seems to me that he's not friendly at all. What he's trying to be is offensive, but he's offensive to the right things. He's not about avoiding offense to families. He's about trying to tear down ideas. He's about trying to tear down strongholds and everything that exalts itself against the name of Christ. So he's really not friendly at all. Rather, he's offensive. But the question is who you're going to offend.
Dave, you know, this was not the only film festival that represented family values or Christian values. There was another film festival, and this was really in the heart of Hollywood. And Dave, you understand there are two different ways of looking at the motion picture industry or involvement in society for Christians. And one is to get involved by jumping right in the middle of Hollywood. The other way is to go around Hollywood and be a more separatistic approach and develop your own separatistic approaches to film and do it sort of in run around the system. And that's what Doug Phillips has done with the San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival. This other film festival, I mean, you know, here's some examples. I mean, we did not place some of these as winners in our San Antonio Film Festival, but the winners that came out of this Movie Guide Awards in the entertainment industry in Hollywood include here The Adventures of Tintin, Cars 2, Courageous was there, which is great, Hugo, Justin Bieber, Never Say Never, whoever he is, I think he's that pop singer, isn't he, that's got that tattoo of Jesus on his right thigh. Then you got Mars Needs Moms, Mr. Popper's Penguins, The Muppets, Puss in Boots, Soul Surfer. These were winners for this film festival, most of which were not winners at our festival down in San Antonio. I think there's a difference here. Can you see a little bit of a difference? If you look at this website, you know, you certainly see a difference between the family-friendly crowd that we had, the 2,000 people plus down in San Antonio and the couple hundred Hollywood elites that gathered for the Movie Guide Awards in Hollywood.
Are very gullible here and are being ensnared. They're being grabbed by the vain philosophies of this world. You know, it's a little bit like if Christians were to show up in a house of prostitution, and they would be oblivious to everything that's happening only because the prostitutes were wearing nice shoes. The nice shoes aren't the big picture. The big picture is how much sin and rebellion. I mean, the whole house of ill repute is there for the purpose of sin and for rebellion. See, if God is not part of the metaphysic, if he's not part of the ethic, then you're basically denying God. Many Christians will go to a film and they'll evaluate the ethic of the film on whether or not there's too much skin or the right amount of skin or the right places of skin or whether or not the murder happens in slow motion or if the thief is the good guy or the bad guy. There is a lot of confounding of God's law in the ethic. We look at a movie and we say that is a bad movie because they blasphemed more than 9 times. If it was only 8 times, then it was probably an acceptable movie. We're not taking ideas captive. Rather, we're being made captive by the ideas of the world.
And granted, some of the films might be a little more positive than others. And Dave, I think there are points at which you've got to attack. I mean, you get the example of Jesus who was attacking the Pharisees. And we're going to talk about how to use humor in attack and the endearing form in just a moment. I spoke on this at the San Antonio Film Festival because, friends, we are in a battle. We are in a battle. And we're battling not just flesh and blood, but principalities and powers. We're battling bad ideas. And we have to present some strong documentaries from time to time that bring some of these ideas down so they smash into 1,000 pieces. And that's what happens when you have passionate men and women producing some tremendous films. They've got convictions. They've got a worldview. They've got some talent that's God-given and Spirit-directed. And they've got enough passion to bring some of these ideas down with some of the most amazing films that have ever been produced in the history of filmography. Well, ladies and gentlemen, in just a moment, we're going to talk about one aspect of this, and that is humor. I presented on humor at the San Antonio Film Festival. Be back in just a moment. My name is Kevin Swanson. Dave also in studio with me.
Are you tired of running the corporate rat race? Are you struggling to make healthcare choices? Are you looking for a better job? Maybe even a job that your entire family can be involved in. Do you want to take your family to the next level? The 2012 Family Economics Conference is designed to help family with the vision and resources to make practical steps to build their family's economy. From practical household budgeting and finance, to starting your own business, to making wise decisions about college and career preparation, the Family Economics Conference has something for everyone. There will even be a special Proverbs 31 track for the ladies' role in the family economy. For more information, or to sign up online, go to www.familyeconomics2012.com. That's familyeconomics2012.com.
Welcome back to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson just back from San Antonio from the Independent Christian Film Festival down there last weekend. And folks, one of the things that I expressed from the front as well as in the breakout sessions was that Christians are those who typically are those contributing to the demise of the culture. It is Christians contributing to the demise of the culture. Because remember, the culture has a Christian flavor initially in this country, and it moves more and more towards a non-Christian culture. That is, there's some way in which we get from Bach to rape rap. There's some way in which we get from Pilgrim's Progress to Heather Has Two Daddies as recommended curriculum for New York City school districts. There's a way in which we get from Laura Ingalls Wilder to the body-pierced, vampire-infatuated teenage girls of the 21st century. And there's a ways in which you get toward, you move your culture towards embracing vampirism and witchcraft and other forms of music and cultural presentations that are antithetical to the laws of God. There's ways in which cultures sink, and they sink by means of apostasy. And typically those who lead the apostasy are not non-Christians or pagans to begin with. They're Christians. In fact, most of the bad culture presented, most of the bad direction or the bad trajectory that is added to our culture on the macro scale is due to Christians. Talking about people like Marilyn Manson, who grew up in a nice little Plymouth Brethren church and went to a Plymouth Brethren school and then decided that he was going to become a freak rocker. Katy Perry, who was part of a Christian church and parents were pastors in Santa Barbara, California. She got tired of singing Amazing Grace, and now she's encouraging little teeny bopping girls to be lesbians by her top 10 productions that she produces these days. Whitney Houston also, by the way, came from a Christian home and, of course, died in a drug-infested stupor. Ladies and gentlemen, it typically is Christians that lead the culture. Believe it or not, professing Christians coming out of churches are the ones leading the culture. They have a certain amount of character that they've inherited over a long period of time, and they take that character and they get involved in the pop culture, and they don't recognize the antithesis. They don't go into battle. They don't battle the antithesis with a thesis of God's law and God's standards. And the end result is more synthesis, and more antithesis as the years go by. And so my beef with Christians is that they get involved in culture. I don't want Christians involved in culture if they're going to take it the wrong direction. I don't want them involved in culture if they're so naive that they're going to adopt all of the pagan standards and set wrong trajectories for our children and grandchildren. I don't want Christians involved. I don't want Christians doing movies. I don't want Christians doing comedy. I don't want Christians doing anything if they aren't first well-established with their worldview and are able to distinguish between what is good and what is bad. Dave, I mean, it's a shame when you have great Christian leaders. I mean, some of the top-notch evangelical leaders in America, including professors at Covenant Theological Seminary, call the Harry Potter books a beautiful, beautiful thing. They think it's a beautiful, beautiful thing that a homosexual Dumbledore is resurrected at the end, evidently continues his lifestyle of homosexuality. I mean, they just love it. They embrace homosexuality, these Christian leaders who embrace Harry Potter. They love the homosexuality and the witchcraft involved in Harry Potter. And they never, ever point to the fact that that witchcraft was ultimately rooted, that power that that Harry Potter assembled for himself really was rooted in the Phoenix Bird. And the Phoenix Bird, of course, is something that gave birth to itself in sort of a pantheistic worldview. They're not even looking at these sorts of things. All they say is, there's a redemptive theme here. There's a resurrection theme here. But they never look into the metaphysics. They're never looking for the bottom line worldview perspective that runs Harry Potter or the vampire tales or fill in the blank. The Christians are so incredibly naive. I wish they'd stay out of culture. I wish these Francis Schaeffer professors who work at Covenant Theological Seminary would stay out of culture. Just stay out of it, because they do not have the discernment that is necessary to really identify the worldview metaphysical perspectives of the Harry Potter tales, or the ethical perspectives for that matter. Dave, I spent about an hour on the issue of fantasy and a biblical approach to fantasy. And then I took an hour and I talked about humor. I love humor. I think humor is an important part of life. It's biblical. But there are two forms of humor. The first form of humor is where you attack that which is evil. The other form of humor is where you endear that which is good. So it's very, very simple. Very simple concept when it comes to humor. And I love the biblical treatments of humor. I love Elijah when he engages in attack humor before the 800, 900 human sacrificing prophets of Baal that were just about ready to destroy him and all the other prophets of God that existed at that time. Here's Elijah mocking them because they couldn't bring down fire from their God from heaven. He says, I think your God may be indisposed. You know, he may be in the restroom. Knock a little louder. Maybe you can wake him up. You know, very sarcastic, satirical forms of humor. Or Isaiah, in Isaiah 44 and verse 12, says, it's hard work making gods. I mean, you got out there as you're making your own gods, you know? I mean, it's hard work making gods. Gods can't make themselves, so I guess you're going to have to make them for yourself. You take a piece of wood, and you cut part of it out of there, and you use that to warm your meal, and then you take part of the tree, and you make a toilet seat out of it, and then you take the rest of it and make a god out of it. You know, that's great satire. That's incredibly great. That's powerful satire. And I gave a number of examples of that throughout Scripture. And I think it's important to use attack humor. I think you ought to attack that which is evil. And Jesus attacks that which is evil when he refers to the Pharisees as whited sepulchres. When he says they're like straining at gnats and swallowing camels. It's a humorous reference of sort, but it's used to attack a system of thought which Jesus finds repulsive. And so, Dave, again, I don't think Christians hate nearly enough, and I don't think they love nearly enough. So, again, we need to love the things that are good and endear the things that are good, and that drives endearing humor. And then we need to attack that which is evil, and that should result in some satirical forms. And, of course, we've been known to use some satirical forms on this program in time past. A lot of Christians aren't comfortable with that, and they will argue with us and say, well, you're not supposed to attack anything. We're supposed to love everything, including sodomy and including all the worst possible things you could ever, ever imagine. You're supposed to love it all. You're not supposed to attack anything. Don't ever use satire or sarcasm to attack anything because everything is something we're to embrace. No. That's wrong. Jesus hates the deeds of the Nicolaitans. He commends the Church of Ephesus for hating the deeds of the Nicolaitans. And then he went on and said, you know, you're not loving very much, though. So they're bad lovers, good haters. And then later on, he says to the Church of Thyatira, he says, you guys cottoned up. You guys love this Jezebel. You ought to hate Jezebel. You ought to kick her out. You ought to get her out. Because if you embrace Jezebel, I'm going to come and I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to kill Jezebel. I'm going to kill all of you. They have pretty violent language there used in Revelation chapter 2. I know people be a little turned off with Jesus Christ and the language that he uses there, but people should actually read Jesus from time to time, Dave. I would suggest a read of Jesus Christ because he is strong in his hate language.
So WWJS, who would Jesus offend? Sometimes I get the sense that Christian comedians, those who make a living at the Christian comedy clubs and stuff, think that the laughing for the sake of laughing is a sufficient reason for laughing, that joy for the sake of joy is okay. And although I would say that joy and laughing are important parts of the Christian life, it doesn't exist because of itself. It's not a sufficient cause just to laugh. It is okay to laugh at evil. God sits in the heavens and he laughs at his enemies, and it's okay to laugh at that which God has given us joy. But laughter itself is not the reason.
Dave, let me give you an example of this. Tim Hawkins is one of the top-notch Christian comedians today. And his early stuff, not as bad. But as he's gone forward, we're starting to see that his humor falls far, far short of a biblical standard. Because I don't think he's thought about this kind of stuff. I don't think he knows what makes for good humor and what makes for bad humor. But, Dave, I'd like to contrast this with Brian Regan. Brian Regan has a little piece that's actually very good. But here Tim Hawkins has a piece that does not conform very well. Now, there's parts of it that aren't bad. And I'm going to point out the parts that are good, the parts that are lousy. But now I want you to listen to this just for a moment. And I want you we're going to interact with this.
People think I'm a rock star all the time. Like, dude, you're a rock star, man? You're like a rock star. You can fly around. Rock stars don't have to rent cars. I do. Rock stars get picked up by a limo, man. You're never going to see Mick Jagger lost in a Hertz parking lot. All right? I was driving through Durant, Oklahoma. And I saw a sign there that said, Oklahoma Shakespeare Festival. Wouldn't you love to see Shakespeare done in Duran, Oklahoma? Romeo, Romeo! Where y'all at? I had a friend call me not too long ago. He said, dude, I'm getting married. I want you to sing at my wedding. I'm like, half of me's going, no way. The other half of me's like, I can make this a wedding no one's ever going to forget. There's a lot of songs that can go well, be very appropriate at a wedding. We're walking down that. She's my best friend's girl. But she used to be mine. That wouldn't be good. You look like a lady. I'm sorry. You ever seen The Super Nanny? Anybody seen that show? It's the best show ever. The Super Nanny is where this English nanny comes over and helps these demonic possessed children from America. And they're just like, ah! And she never loses her cool. She's like, no, Thomas, no. We don't do that, Thomas, no. What do you mean you just knocked your mother out cold with a pot? That's not what we do. My mom would tell me what she's going to do to me. I'm going to beat the snot out of you. Oh, she was detailed. I'm going to spin your head off like a lid on a pickle jar. I'm going to take my leather belt with my name on it. I'm going to beat you and brand you at the same time. I'm like, Mom, you're the worst mommy in the world. No, I took second last year. I'm going first this year. I do a lot of the same things my parents do, but there's one thing that my wife and I do not do the same. We decided a while back we are not going to spank our children anymore. We're just not going to spank them. I don't judge me if you want to. No more spanks. We're going to use a taser. Yeah. Smart stuff. Whatever, Dad. No, 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 no. So I'll feed you to the fire. The fire. They're going to eat you up. They don't care about you. Hey there, Delilah. This is your ex-boyfriend, Samson.
Endearing humor versus attack humor. And the problem, of course, with postmodern humor, sometimes it's hard to know. Does he lighten our perspective of child abuse, dishonor of mothers? Is he attacking his mother for child abuse, or is he endearing us to her and her child abuse? Or should he be attacking his mother in public because of her child abuse and her angry mothering tactics? If he did so, it might be dishonoring. So, again, postmodern humor sort of gets us in this noncommittal position where it refuses to commit one way or the other. He's also got this little piece called Hey There, Delilah. This is your ex-boyfriend, Samson. You came in while I was sleeping, and I couldn't feel you cutting. I didn't hear you creeping out the door. You left my hair piled on the floor while I just snored. Oh, it's what you did to me. Oh, now I feel so weak. Oh, I look like a freak. Delilah, you're a geek. See, as we go along here, we wonder if he's attacking Delilah or is he endearing us to Delilah. Again, difficult to know whether we're one way or the other. Is Delilah a geek or is she a whore that opposes the people of God? You know, again, this kind of humor is a little dangerous. Now, there's one little segment that I thought had some potential, and that was his little Oklahoma gig, where again, we're endearing ourselves to our own weaknesses, our own ignorance. We're not talking about sin now. We're talking about the humor plays on the mortality of men, the weakness of men, the ignorance of men. And it's okay to laugh at ourselves, you know? It's okay to laugh that if we're a bunch of hokey okies and we don't know how to do decent Shakespeare. That's kind of fun. You can laugh at yourselves. Now, if we're just laughing at Oklahomans and we're just attacking Oklahomans, that's one thing. But I think there's something potentially endearing about that particular line.
Self-deprecating humor does really help a lot. We become the target rather than targeting others. And people can see and laugh with us at our foibles. It's very important, Kevin, that I think the Christians do not use humor to attack the wrong things or the right things, the things that should be built up and not attacked. You look at the world way of doing things. You have Jon Stewart, perhaps the most popular comedian, although he does a new show right now. He's a mocker. He's what the Bible calls a mocker and a scoffer. We need to be as funny as Jon Stewart, but we need to do it with the right aim, to build the kingdom of God, to build up the people of God, and to enjoy God.
Yeah. And Dave, I think it's okay to to endear ourselves to some of the weaknesses of human beings or ignorance. I mean, you know, when a little child is running across the floor and yelling something kind of funny that where, you know, you're not laughing at the person, at the little two-year-old. You find the little line endearing, and you know you've actually enjoyed some entertainment from your youngest boy. he's a laugh. He's a cutie. But see, that's not a mockery. When you laugh at some of the things that he does, you're endeared to him in the laugh.
Not just laughing at
and
ourselves.
That's okay.
It's laughing at ourselves in a particular environment, particularly the ridiculousness of our current bureaucracies.
Yeah, and this is what Brian Regan's all about. I want you to listen to this one. You just mentioned that. And Brian is really good with this. He has this little piece called UPS. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not, but check this out.
We just moved. I called UPS to ask them to help out with some boxes. Now, they're a good service, but you have to have information ready about your boxes before you even call them. I had no idea. I called them up. Yeah, I have 10 boxes. Can you come pick them up?
We need to know the weight and the girth. Okay, goodbye.
So I called back, we need the weight and the girth. Okay, I don't know what the weight is, and I don't know what girth means. So now what's the procedure? So this guy talks to me like I'm 4 years old.
Well, do you have a bathroom scale?
Yeah, but if I put the box on the scale, it's going to cover up the numbers! What, do I take them off really quick? zero! I'm not fast enough! What's he talking about? So then he gives me like his Mr. Wizard formula.
How about if you stand on the scale and weigh yourself, get off the scale, pick up the box, get back on, weigh you and the box together and subtract your own weight. I'm going, slow down! Hold on, Professor!
I know this guy's never tried this, because I tried it and you still can't see the numbers! What am I, Mr. Olympia? £3. Then I had to hang up in the middle of his girth formula. He kept assuring me it was easy.
You know, the girth is very simple to figure out. You take the length and you double that by the smaller of the height after you triangulate the hypotenuse from the third side.
Okay, I gotta go. I'm getting another call. Yeah, I'm too stupid to talk to you. I just want to not be on with you any longer. So this is true. I figured I would call back and just make up some numbers. No. Let them come out and pick them up. If it's wrong, I'll pay the difference. Just dispatch the truck. Please. So I called back. Yeah, I have 10 boxes and... No, I'm another guy. Yeah, and they all weigh exactly 22 pounds and they'll have a girth of... 3.
3 what?
3 girth units. Come pick them up, please. I'm begging you. They're boxes and they're brown and they have tape all on them. And they probably fit on a dolly.
Better humor. Dave, I mean, it's night and day. I mean, you know, he might have his issue. Maybe he called back and he's lying the second time. We're laughing at the lying. Okay. But most of it, okay, 90% of this guy's humor is making fun of his own ignorance. And it's hysterical. And then it's drawing us in because we're ignorant about these things too. And then we laugh, and we laugh at ourselves, and it's good humor. This is what I'm talking about. So there's a difference between that and banging on your kid's head and laughing and saying, you know, I've been tasing my kids lately, and you know, ha ha ha. Again, their endearing attack. Again, you're stuck there in that postmodern form of humor that really could be very, very negative. Either way you go with it. And Dave, this is endearing stuff. And again, I think the self-deprecation is what helps a lot. It's got to go somewhere, too. I mean, I talked about the importance of the fear of God in the midst of all of this. And if it's all humor, if we're laughing ourselves all the way into the gates of hell, then we're out of balance. And yet there's a place for joy. Yet there's a place, Dave, in every home, I think, for joy, for expressing joy. And laughing a little bit with our children and with our family, and you know, when a beagle walks through the house and stinks up the place, you know, sometimes we're laughing at the beagle. I mean, we're just a funny little thing in our little home. And ladies and gentlemen, I think it's important for us to maintain a proper balance in the home between attack and endearing humor. Dave, I would also caution people not to go attack all the time either. Because if we're attacking all the time, then we're never really getting to the redemptive message. We're never getting to the fact that there is an arc in the midst of all of this judgment and in the midst of all of this sin and all these things that are happening around us. There still is something positive, something hopeful. If we are in the ark, now granted, the flood is bad and there is judgment around us and there may be dead bodies floating around us and there is something that is a bit of a gravitas about our situation, but even in the midst of that, can we enjoy humor? And my answer is yes. There is a proper balance for it. As long as the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God, as long as there is faith in that home, as long as there is love because we've been forgiven, as long as there is joy because of the love and the forgiveness that God has given to us. If you follow that formula, ladies and gentlemen, I think you can arrive at a proper position of love. But a home without the fear of God is a home that is laughing its way through the gates of hell. A home without joy, a home without love, is a home that is always overwhelmed with the shouts and the condemnations of the law and the fear of judgment. And we shouldn't be there either. It's a both and. It's the fear of God is the basis, is the foundation of wisdom and understanding, and it is the love and the joy that comes when we know we've been forgiven. Dave, as you know, we can eat our food and drink our wine with joy because we are justified, and that is the book of Ecclesiastes. We know that our works are received by God, and therefore we can joy, therefore we can laugh, therefore we can exalt and rejoice in the good things that God has given to us. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with our radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. If you'd like a little bit more on some of the stuff we've been doing on fantasy and humor as presented to the San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival, just go to the Vision Forum site, voicevisionforum.com, and pick up your tapes or your CDs from that event. You can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.